When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's the Final Word World Cup Daily 2023 for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. I'm Adam Collins in London. Jeff Lemon has had the great privilege of being at the Work, Rest and Play to watch that. It's day 34 of the tournament. Jeff, you've got 30 seconds off the top. There'll be a lot more seconds required after that.
Afghanistan were well set up. Ibrahim Zadran made their first World Cup 100, 129. Rashid Khan smashed some at the end. They made 291 and Australia were in all sorts. The Afghan quicks blew them away early, four wickets early, two to the spinners and a run out. They ended up at 71 for six. There's no way they could win it there, from there. There is no way. Glenn Maxwell made 100. That was a token consolation 100. Then he made another 100. He made 201 to win the game from nowhere with Pat Cummins for company in a double century partnership with three overs to spare on no legs at the end, couldn't move, cramping to the heavens, and somehow found the middle of the bat almost every time. That's the end of my summary, but that is, I don't want to recency bias this, but it's at least equal with the greatest things I have ever seen on a cricket field tonight. I've never seen a match like that or a performance exactly like that.
All right, let's do the administrative bits. I don't think we're going to need to be in a hurry here, Jeff. I don't think anyone's going to hold us to a podcast that goes for 23 and a half minutes or something like that today. They know the background. They'll want to hear, I expect, for you and me talk about this in a bit more detail. So
it goes for as long as it goes.
Goes for as long as it goes. 292 is the target. They get there in the 47th. Maxwell, 201 from 128 balls, 21 fours and 10 sixes. Pat Cummins joins him for the biggest eighth wicket stand in one-day history by an absolute mile. They had 202 that went between the 19th over and the end in the 47th. Cummins made 12, not out, from 68 with one boundary, a strike rate of 17.7. It almost feels wrong to spend the next half an hour talking about Maxwell if we don't start with Cummins. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but what an incredibly disciplined, measured, accomplished performance it was from the captain to come out there. And as he said in his post-game media commitments, it was Maxwell telling him that he thought he could still do it. But I must admit, Jeff, when Cummins walked out there, I tweeted something to the effect of, they've got to be a bit careful here. They get rolled for 100. Net run rate might yet be a factor for Australia. Mm-hmm. If they lose this, you know, by 150-something, 160-something runs. And if they do lose to Bangladesh, they might end up in the drop zone because of net run rate, such as the volatility of these matters. So there was a jeopardy as far as semi-final stuff was concerned. They could have shut up shop, but Cummins said it himself, Maxwell never was talking about anything other than how he was going to navigate his way to victory, and navigate it he did through the most challenging of physical circumstances with his body basically shutting down, 40-degree heat. He described in his interview when he was named man of the match that he hasn't been able to do this kind of high intensity training in hot weather because he broke his leg in two this time last year. A number of other injury setbacks along the way. And we spoke a little bit about this after the century against the Netherlands, but he needed someone to go with him, and Cummins was the absolute perfect ally in all of that.
It's interesting. If you look at it, if you look at the scoreboard, the scorecard, you might sort of say, well, what was going on with that? What was going on with that was that the rate, Maxwell kept the rate at about a run a ball required through most of that innings. And so the rate was broadly in hand, which meant that, and particularly once he started to cramp up later in the innings and couldn't run between the wickets, then once Cummins came on to strike in an over, there were no quick singles, there were no slow singles. There was an occasional sort of hobbled, almost crawled single if the ball was going for what might otherwise have been a three. But there were extensive periods where it was like, okay, Cummins is on strike with four balls to go. That's fine. Just face them out.
Yeah.
Just face them out because that will leave Maxwell on strike for the next over, at which point he would hit a four or a six, and then there would be a run at some point so he could try to take strike for the next over, and then that was it. All Cummins needed to do was shut up shop. And I'm sure it went against his instincts in a way because we know that he can hit sixes. He hit four of them in an innings against was it the New Zealand game the other day. He hit 37 off 17 from memory with four sixes, hit some monsters in his time, 14 ball 50 in the IPL and all the rest of it. For that player to say, it's not my job to hit sixes today or to hit fours. Mm. I don't need to do anything. I just need to stay around because it doesn't matter if we soak up four or five dot balls here because Maxwell's going to catch that up in the very next over. So that's how they managed it. But that's how they had to start managing it once Maxwell was on about 130 because he was cooked. He'd been 50 overs in the field. He bowled his 10 overs. He bowled well, contributed in that sense, and then had to come out and bat, particularly early in the piece. So it's 49 for four when Maxwell comes out, and that's in the ninth over. So basically he's involved in all but nine and eight and a bit overs of the match in a physical capacity, and all he's had is the half hour off. And then he bats that innings and bats through the rest of the innings. So that's sort of where it goes from after those two come together. But at the point where they do come together, Afghanistan are surging. They've got all the momentum. This game is theirs. They're going to win this game. And it's partly because of the way they finish off with the bat, where Ibrahim Zadran creeps his way up to 100, but then blows up after that, hits three sixes, takes them on, and Rashid Khan does the same. They've got momentum, and then they come out and nick off Travis Head second ball. Naveen Al-Haq does the business there, and then suddenly the ball's doing all sorts. It's swinging, it's seaming, and Azmatullah, as the medium pace seamer, who's sort of been seen as just a bit of a donkey work bowler, bowls an incredible spell with Naveen doing the same at the other end.
Total final word favourite energy from Azmatullah. I was getting really excited on the Guardian coverage. I was quite happy to be on the Guardian coverage today where I could commit all my energy to writing it down rather than speaking it out. I might have struggled with that. Might talk more about that in a little bit later in the podcast. But now Azmatullah, who, you know, we've seen have a bit of a golden arm. We haven't seen him work over a player of David Warner's calibre though. Mm. The maiden that preceded it, then first ball of his next set castles him when Warner tried to play the big shot because he was pinned down by the young all-rounder. You know, he's batted as high as number five in this tournament. Hit a glorious six-second ball off Mitchell Stark today, Azmatullah, just to give them in that back 10 a chance of doing something special. And look, they get to 291 thanks to a bit of good fortune with Marcus Stoinis clearly taking a catch out in the deep and it being overturned by the third umpire, Chris Gaffney. You had a mare there. On another day, I might give you a five-minute rant about specialist TV umpires and the need for them. I'm not going to do that today. It's not that kind of podcast. But
there's no time.
Azmatullah, yeah, there's another time for that. But Azmatullah bowling as well as he did and then being on a hat-trick to Maxwell first ball. Remember, the first ball to Maxwell, my instinct is he's gone here. That's hit the pad on the way through because obviously it doesn't quite carry to the wicketkeeper. And I'm thinking he's in strife here. That's hitting line. It was the faint outside edge of the bat after it just missed the front pad that saved Maxwell from being a hat-trick victim. And, of course, he gets the piece of great fortune when Mujeeb puts him down at short fine when he's on about, what, 30-odd or something like that, Jeff? 33. And there's another missed opportunity when he clunks one to mid-off where two fielders are running back with the flight. I think it's Rashid Khan and possibly the captain, Hashmatullah.
It's Hashmatullah. Rashid was the bowler. So Rashid started going for it and was never going to make it. It was going too far back. And Hashmatullah was coming a long way across from cover. Dived out. He actually overdived it. We've seen a few players do that in this World Cup. So got it up near the heels of the hand because he dived a little bit too far from that one that sort of skewed up off the leading edge.
But it was such a dominant display from Afghanistan. You know, the way that Naveen fought back after conceding boundaries and blows off Mitchell Marsh's pad with an absolute beauty, changing the angle, going wider on the crease, you know, getting Travis Head with exactly the kind of ball that gets Travis Head out because he feels the need to get bat on ball when you're around the wicket. So that's his game, by the way. I'm not critical of Head for playing the ball the way he did, but that's just classy bowling. A good delivery is allowed to get you out. The squeeze was on to such a profound extent. Josh Inglis nicking off first ball. It really did feel like all out 100. It felt like momentous night for Afghanistan, not only beating Australia, going four in a row, five out of six, beating another full member, doing it with a leg in the air and going into the South Africa game with big momentum. And that is where, just to come back to Maxwell for a moment, that's where what Maxwell did at that point with Cummins was so important. Stoinis gets out reverse sweeping, a bit of a frazzled shot. He hits so many boundaries from the first ball of an over. I counted 11. It might have been more than that by the end. It probably was. But he put pressure on the fielding team with the first ball without anything outlandish. He was just picking a gap and playing the way he can play. Most of the time it was coming off. And that gave Cummins the flexibility to go, we're not going to let this required run rate get above 7. We'll let it hover between 6 and 7. And we know that if Maxwell's batting in the 47th over, as it proved, we're going to win comfortably. And I mean, don't you love it when a plan comes to fruition? Rarely does it, but this, you know, we've seen Jonathan Trott and his whiteboard. This needed to be a lot more sophisticated than that. And it needed to have a player of the gifts of Maxwell and the composure of Cummins coming together when they did to make it even vaguely possible.
I want to just run through those early dismissals that we've mentioned in bits and pieces. So Travis Head's second ball that he faces in the second over, he's gone. Mitchell Marsh comes out and hits it as cleanly as he ever has, and as cleanly as he ever will. That he there's a flat pull shot for 6 over mid wicket, and then he thunders a straight drive down the ground as well into the sight screen. He's 24 off 11 when he's LBW to Naveen in the sixth over. They've already got 43 on the board by that point. And then David Warner in the ninth over plays that slog across the line. Weird shot, incredible delivery. The ball, so Asmatula comes around the wicket, seam up, swings in prodigiously, hits the seam, decks in even further, and it starts from really wide on the crease, and Warner sees the angle in and decides to smash it over mid-wicket. Nowhere near it, loses his off stump, out of the ground, three down. And at that point, at three down in the ninth, I'm thinking Afghanistan are going to win this. Like they are on here. And then Inglis, very next ball, plays at one. They started with 3 slips at one point. They had 2 slips in for Inglis at that stage. That catch is taken. And then there's the Labuschagne run out where Maxwell takes a single that you would take between overs 40 and 50, but Labuschagne's not expecting him to take it within the first 15 overs of the game. So he clips it to mid-wicket. Labuschagne's a little slow to start, stutters a bit and then goes and then sort of gets the bat twisted in his hand as he tries to dive in. It goes face up. So he actually makes his ground, gets the bat over the line, but it's not grounded.
Yeah, it's the roof side, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Just on that Maxwell Marnus run out before we brush over it, it is Marnus's fault. I mean, it's Maxwell's call. It's in front of square. So the way you're taught to call when you're growing up, in front of square is the striker's decision. He calls very loudly. Stump Mike picks this up. It's a loud, effusive call of yes, and he takes off. Maxwell makes his ground by meters. So Marnus's indecision was what cost him there. And, you know, that happens, right? I take your point that it's in the first 15 overs and they've been losing wickets, but it's not Marnus's to dictate from the non-striker's end there. It's not his call. So it's, you know, that's the risk you run when you don't honour the call immediately.
But there's that sense of momentum, right? When you see, particularly with runouts, there's always that feeling that a team is really starting to stuff it up, like that they're everything's going wrong. If they're managing to lose wickets without even losing them to bowlers, and then Stoinis comes out and you know sweeps 1-4 powerfully, but then tries a reverse sweep. You don't see Marcus Stoinis play a lot of reverse sweeps. He's got a very good conventional slog sweep, but he's more a hit down the ground sort of guy or sweep conventionally against spin. And he's facing Rashid Khan, and Rashid Khan bowls furiously fast and he fizzes it and he bowls at the stumps, and that's exactly what happens this time. He's LBW. So there's that momentum. The momentum is cascading in one direction. It is all, like you say, Australia all out 110, and then it's Maxwell managing to put a cork in that for probably 10, 15 overs and just gradually work his way back into the game. And then by that point, he's on like 70, and you're thinking, oh, he's going to make a consolation 100 here in a loss that won't be as bad as it should as it would have been.
It's funny, it actually got worse than that because the Stark dismissal, I'm not sure whether you were able to pick this up on radio, television did a good job of this after the fact. So Stark initially, he initially is like,
I totally forgot
what's
about
going on Stark here. What's going on here? I don't know whether he's caught it. Brilliant bit of work from Ikram to have the presence to, after the deflection, came off his glove and kind of instinctively followed the ball before diving at the perfect time. So well played there to drag it in and all the rest of it.
Yeah. But Stark's discombobulated. Three touches on that. He slaps it up with his left hand and drops it. Then he slaps it up in the air again and then he clutches it to his chest with his right hand as he tumbles over.
Right. And Stark's so like confused by the whole moment. And I suppose the pressure cooker that the Wankhede would have felt like at the time, that he didn't review it and it did miss his edge. It hit the off stump. Now, we've spoken a lot about balls hitting those stumps, the zing bales or the stumps lighting up and and the bail's not being removed. So I suppose natural justice was done because he was out anyway.
It hit
but
the stump.
Nevertheless, it did hit the stump. It definitely hit off stump. But my point is that
that's a bit. Like, I saw on the replay that he'd missed it, but I didn't see that.
No. Yeah, it hit off stump. Hit off stump. Definitely. So the bail didn't come off. So
okay.
Yeah. So he was bold,
even though he was given.
The way you and I have talked about it on the podcast before, we want to see technology introduced for bold dismissals to avoid that kind of thing into the future. Again, it's not the day for that. It's definitely not the podcast for that. But still, it added to that sense that they were just cooked. It was one of those days where nothing goes right.
Yep.
You know, they've effectively sealed qualification for the semifinals, and they're, you know, in a footy sense, they're dropping a game in round 20 when they're going to make the top four. You know, you see teams do it all the time, but that is where Cummins, like, again, I want, and we'll do a bigger Maxwell dive in a sec about the way he played, but where Cummins was able to stop the rot by batting basically like it was a test match and going, no, I'm just going to get behind the ball, knock it on the head and let some pressure be absorbed for a while and let Maxwell find his way, acknowledging there were a couple of drop catches in quick succession. The leg before shout where Maxwell is given out on the field to Noor Ahmed, you pick it up.
So, but because Mitchell Starc doesn't use the review, the reason he doesn't want to use the review is, what if I burn that review and then we need it later? And then Maxwell uses it. Now, we talk about causality a lot on this show. So if Mitchell Starc does use the review, then he will be found not out. And he will be allowed to continue batting, and maybe Maxwell doesn't end up playing the great innings that he plays. Something would happen differently. He wouldn't end up needing the exact review in the circumstances that he needed it, but he might. That was the danger in Mitchell Starc's mind was, what if I use this review and then later we need one and we don't have one?
Yeah.
They do need one. They do use it because Noor Ahmed, who bowls really well, again, the 18-year-old left-arm wrist spinner, pitches one just in line with leg stump. It's going on. It's hitting him in line. He's just got a big stride forward, and he reviews it because, of course, you have to. And it's just clearing middle stump by maybe half a centimetre.
But again, I'm not sure if you saw this on radio. Maxwell was making his way off. Maxwell had decided it was out, and Zampa was walking down the stairs. He saw the replay, and he's like, oh, that's hit me. Knee roll. It's going to be three reds. You know, I'm stuffed here. It's at least umpire's call. You know, we often joke about the setting that the Hawkeye tracking is on with these things. But he had a huge grin on his face, like, how the fuck have I gotten away with that one? Zampa had walked through the dressing room, put his helmet on, was coming down those famous stairs at Mumbai, then saw the projection and started walking back. So, you know, they all accepted that it was Maxwell walking back into the dressing room at about, you know, 150 for eight, and it was going to be over very shortly. Right. Little did they know.
But, I mean, that's what I thought watching this. I thought this, you know, another opportunity will come. But Maxwell said afterwards that point, the LBW point, was when he said, I'm poking around too much. I need to be more aggressive, because if I can put pressure back on them, then it's going to be easier to face the bowling. And that's exactly what he starts doing. And it's not crazy. He brings up his 100 from, was it 78 balls for the 100?
Yep.
I'm sure you wrote that down on the blog at the time, which is, I mean, that's around about the Gilbert Jessop test match 100 record for England, isn't it? 78 balls, something like that. So it's a quick, it's a quick 100. If you're making a 78 ball 100, it's a fast one-day 100. It's not record setting in this day and age. Obviously, Maxwell got one off 40 balls against the Dutch, but that was an entirely different situation. But in this situation, to do it off 78 is pretty bloody good going. And I just thought, well, it's nice for him that he's made a ridiculously good 100 in a situation where the team is cooked. And at some point, he's going to hit one up in the air, because that is what you have to do. And he just doesn't. He just continues to not do it. And he doesn't try to do it all at once. He doesn't try to take 30 off any over. He just keeps picking it off. And then when he's got around about 130 on the board, that's when he starts cramping up and starts finding it more difficult to move. And this is, I think, where this innings shifts gears from a really good innings to possibly, certainly the best one-day innings I've ever seen, probably the best one ever played. No one's ever made a double 100 chasing before. Every one-day double 100 has been in the first innings. No one's ever put on a partnership that big for the eighth wicket before, like by a mile, of which, like you said, Cummins made 12 of the 200 that they put on. And Maxwell, with a few extras in there, probably made 180 of them. And to run down a target from that far behind, but to do it when he can't move. He's trying to run singles, and he's hobbling singles, like almost walking and trying to power walk, like trying to, you know, was it Jane Saville coming into the stadium in the 2000 Olympics? He's walking, running between the wickets like her, just to try to get down to the other end so that he can face the next over. And then you've got Cummins just blocking out whole overs to get Maxwell back on strike. And yet somehow he keeps finding the middle of the bat regularly enough that he keeps picking off boundaries. He keeps finding the gaps. They've got five guys with their heels on the ropes, and he keeps hitting it sufficiently between them that he's getting it for four.
I just couldn't believe it, right? So this is when the innings goes from being, yeah, you're right. I mean, I didn't see it as a consolation 100 because I could see the way he celebrated it or didn't. You know, normally Maxwell, very emotional guy. We know that. He goes nuts when he makes 100. He just kind of, you know, waved the bat, like job not done. I'm backing myself here. I can do this. I know I can do this. And the problems with cramp kick in at about 120, I reckon, from memory. And that and it gets really bad at about 140, you know, thereabouts, ballpark. Yep. And the fact that he cannot run to the other end, it's a hopping, tumbling, lunging thing that he's doing to get there when he needs to. Cummins played out a maiden in the 43rd over. I mean, it's an incredible analysis when you go through it all. The way they played Rashid Khan's last over when they knew how crucial it was and knocked the last two balls on the head. So Maxwell knocked them both on the head. Didn't even bother trying to get the single from the last ball. It was calculated. It was clever. But it was absolutely fucking bonkers when he was unable to actually use his feet to strike the ball. So he clearly made a decision that I'm going to do this all with eye and core strength. And Shane Watson had a good bit on TV about Maxwell's core strength. I know Watto being a lover of Pilates and all the rest of it, I wasn't surprised to hear him talk about this. But, you know, he was playing legs dead straight, stick cricket, legs dead straight and almost arms dead straight at times as well, flicking the ball with so much power and such glorious timing, and able to get the ball underneath his eye line sufficiently well to keep picking out deep mid-wicket over the rope or through the field. Some of those searing cut shots were a little bit earlier in the innings, but just to put pressure both sides of the ground, they couldn't stack the field to one side to the extent they otherwise might. He played a couple of brilliant reverses. One of them, that reverse flick was akin to the one he played against the Dutch to bring up, I think he went to 92 or something with that against them, where it was a genuine pace and Naveen was back.
44th over, yeah. Was that the one off Azmatullah where he plays the...
Yeah.
He's like, literally can't move his feet by this point. So there's a point where he tries to hobble through for a run and collapses. So he's been on the ground three or four times trying to do stretches. He's had treatment. He's had the trainer out. They're giving him, like, back rubs and things to try to help stop his back seizing up. And then he shuffles through for this single and collapses and just lies there stiff as a board with his arms by his side, literally screaming because the cramps are so bad. And to give you some context, it is so humid here. Like, in Mumbai, it's super hot. It's super sticky. And he's been on the field for 8 hours straight, basically. And he's done. He gets a long treatment break. They haul him back on his feet. Adam Zampa comes down the stairs ready to bat. They're going to retire Maxwell Hurt with about seven overs to go so that Zampa can come out and bat for a couple of overs and hopefully give Maxwell enough time to come back again. And then he gets back on his feet after what felt like 10 minutes and says, okay, I'm going to keep going and I'm just going to keep trying to hit boundaries. And he does. But that reverse, that's off a fast bowler, it's quick, it sits up, and without being able to move his feet, he just turns the wrists around and flicks it over deep third for one of the biggest sixes that he's hit. I cannot describe how insane it is that he's able to do that.
Yeah, and he's on 147 when he hits the deck, and that's the bad one, right? Well, I agree. I think they were considering retiring him Hurt the second time Zampa puts the lid on and goes down the stairs and all the rest of it, only to be sent back up them again. There's even another, like, there's an extra gear he finds even at that point. When he realized that was the last time he actually tried to run a single, had to jog it, had to hop it, and they should have run him out. If they were across this, they should have realized that he was going to try and take the single by hook or by crook, and their, you talked about feet on the rope. They were heels back on the rope. They were so worried about him hitting a six, they weren't equal to the bit where he was incentivized to take one somehow and hobble down there and be on strike for the next over. And so it proved. But from there, you're dealing in a .46 game. And in a .46 game, you occasionally see when there's a player who's super injured. Nathan Lyon at Lords earlier this year springs to mind. But it's not that unusual, right? Where a player is so incapacitated, they've torn a muscle, they can't do anything. And you're right, they eventually hit one up in the air, but he just didn't. It might have been a combination of the pickle juice and the tablets he took a couple of times and all the water he was taking on. There'll be some great photos out of this. The one where he's lying stiff as a board on the ground is going to be memed forever. The one where I don't know which umpire it was, but basically saying, do not get up, mate. Please sit down. Take a load off here, like where Glenn's trying to get back up again when he's in a world of pain. And this is why I think my view is that it is the greatest one-day innings ever played. Because, there are other brilliant all-time performances. We all know what Kapil Dev did against Zimbabwe in the 1983 World Cup. He's 175 not out at one stage. They're 78 for seven. Viv's 189 not out against England in 1984, which I think the statisticians have identified as having the highest degree of difficulty from where they were in the huge partnership for the last wicket. Gilchrist making 149 in a World Cup final. So that extra pressure of doing it in a World Cup final and hitting like a 70-ball 100 or whatever it was and going on with it and taking the game away from Sri Lanka. But I think all of it combined, the injury, the drama, the let off, the making the most of the chances, the broad smile, the madness of Pat Cummins striking at 17 down the other end, the still holding down a non-inconsiderable tally of 292 to be their target, the way he finished it off Mujeeb, the bloke who dropped him, 6-6-4-6 to get there, all of these straight-legged, you know, basically statuesque sixes that he clubs with perfect timing and no feet that he can possibly use. I think you bundle that up all that together, and that's where I land on. We'll never see anything like this ever again. 201 not out, as Ian Smith said. You can wait a lifetime to see another innings like that, and I'm glad that I'm relieved that Glenn was able to do something like that because, there's a whole other layer to this, which we might go into in a sec.
Only 50 over double 100 by an Australian, so he beats Shane Watson's old record of 185, which is one that we've enjoyed looking back on a lot over the years. So, and the fact that he was able to find these gaps everywhere from fine leg to deep mid-wicket to deep backward point where there just shouldn't have been boundaries in between those fielders. So there shouldn't have been, with just the wrists, because he couldn't swing into the ball, he was able to put enough pace on it to beat boundary riders who were waiting back. And I have to say, like, how much you feel for Afghanistan. I doubt this was picked up on the TV. There are certain things you get to see at the ground, but well after that game, once they'd finished the presentations, Jonathan Trott was sitting out there on those advertising boards by the side of the boundary, and he just had his face in his hands for a good period of time, and then he dropped his hands and he was just sitting there looking out over the ground like he couldn't bear to speak to anybody. He was devastated. The way that Hashmatullah spoke at the press conference afterwards, he was shattered, absolutely shattered, because they had World Cup semi-final qualification in the palm of their hands. You know, had they got this, 5 wins, they would have been every chance to go through. They would have been extremely unlucky not to go through from that point. And they should have thrashed Australia sufficiently that they would have got a big net run rate boost. They had it. They had it right there. Ibrahim Zadran makes their first ever World Cup 100 earlier in that day. Should have been on the winning side. You know, played a gem of an innings. And the way that the bowlers worked off the top, you know, they played so well up until the point that they ran into an unstoppable force. And what do you do? You know, it's like the Australians at Headingley in 2019. What do you do when that happens? It's something that happens to you. It's not that you played badly. Like, yeah, they dropped a couple of catches and they could have taken them, but you're supposed to get another catch. A guy's not supposed to rattle off another 170 runs after you drop him in a one-day international, right? A ball's supposed to go up in the air at some point and you catch it. That's just the natural order of things. And what we saw today was against the natural order of things. And so I really feel for that team that has worked so hard and had the game and had it taken away.
Yeah, and the emotional stuff you're referring to, right? Like, that's why we do this. You know, there's all sorts of things that many of us could be doing with our lives, and there sometimes feels like there's a futility about being involved in professional sport. Like, you know, what are we doing, you know, as far as making, you know, the world a better place if you want to be thoroughly altruistic about it? Well, we're talking about the cricket. But it's days like today. It's the emotion that's overlaid. It's the journey you go on together. And it's impossible to divorce the emotion of us being friends with Glenn from this, right? Like, you know, I don't envy you having to call that on radio. I would have been a mess because I care a lot about him. He's a friend, you know, and we don't claim to be overly journalistic when it comes to him. We try our best, but, you know, it is kind of a situation that's evolved over time, and that's human nature. And, you know, I thought when I saw him in India, and I said this after the Dutch podcast when he made the 100 the other week, that seeing him in as bad a nick of that at the start of the year, I thought he's going to really struggle here. His leg was in serious strife. He'd missed a lot of cricket. You know, what was going to be required to get back to that level, that level where, you know, you don't see many people get to. This is the peak of the craft, right? Thousands of people have played professional cricket. Hundreds of thousands, millions have taken the field with a dream of doing so. He's one of the best to ever do it, or maybe the most gifted is a better word to use, to ever do it. And to see him reach peak performance, having gone through as much as he's gone through just to get back to this level again, you do get emotionally caught up in all of this. And I'm just so proud of him as a mate and a friend that he has had this chance to do this thing that people now will talk about forever. It's fucking cool. I hope he senses how much love there is out there for him. I'm sure he does, because, you know, that's the nature of being a professional athlete. Everyone wants to piss in your pocket. But, even last week, and we spoke about this on the weekly show, when he fell off the back of the golf cart, that'll go down in folklore, I'm sure. But, it didn't take much for people to get on his back once again. To do this in the way that he's done it, it's something that I'll never forget. You'll never forget, and I doubt any of our listeners will either.
I've got something to follow on from that, but I think it fits in well with the Hall of Fame, so maybe let's go there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, final word, Hall of Fame, brought to you by Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. Jeff, we've been doing a big drive around the blood banks in London over the last week. Not, you know, us driving people to them, but literally, but maybe at least driving them in a traffic sense, because we've been seeing lots of reports from our listeners being prompted to donate blood before Christmas, which is an acutely challenging time for blood banks, where they need to get more in because there are just more accidents and all the rest of it. So NHS do have blood banks at Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. Blood.co.uk is the easiest way to register, either if you've donated blood before, you know your blood type, that's easy. If you don't, you go to the centre, they do a pinprick test straight away, and then from there, you can sit in the chair and you're all set. So if you're inclined to do so, it'd be a great time to consider going down to Westfield London or Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. We're not far away from Christmas, so we won't pester you about this anymore. But thanks to those listeners of ours who've taken this as their cue. Jeff, your final word moment of the day.
What you were talking about before about trying to describe what was happening out there, because I missed you today because I was on air for a lot of it. So I was doing this game with Daniel Norcross and Henry Moran were the callers listed to do it. Daniel got crook overnight and couldn't come in at all. So he spent the day just ejecting things from both ends in his hotel room.
And he loves Maxi as well, Norky. Yep.
So he was on air for a lot of the Dutch 100, so he got to enjoy himself there at least. Henry made it through the first innings, and then the same thing hit him. So he was down for the count through the second innings. So I basically did most of the second innings on my own. And I was thinking it would have been nice if you'd been there to be able to share the workload and share the moment. But so there was some pressure, but I had a ball at the same time, because there were all of these moments, and it just got more and more ridiculous. So you couldn't get tired doing it, because there was no point where it was repetitive. It kept changing and becoming something else. So that was extraordinary as a thing to get to do. You know, I doubt I'll get to do something like that again in my life. Just on a personal note, you know, seeing somebody else do something that they will never get to repeat in their lives. You know, no, it may be that no one ever plays an innings quite like this again. I'm not sure how the situation could collide to make it possible, although we do always see there's always a new extraordinary thing in sport. That's one of the reasons we love it so much.
People have said to me in the past, you love your footy, wouldn't it be a great option to go into football commentary? And I've had to remind them that if I was doing that, and I was trying to be professional, if it were a grand final quarter and Hawthorn were a kick up or a kick down, I would struggle. And I felt that emotion today, like I would have struggled to have called that game normally. I mean, I suppose you shift gears and you need to find a way to separate yourself from the moment. But, you know, as I said before, like, it's part of the fun. It's part of what makes us human to go on these journeys with players and Glenn, especially with us. I don't have any regret about that. Like, because sometimes it's been tough, right? Like, he's gone through really tough times, and we have felt that, not because we're, he's sharing the burden with us necessarily, but covering his career. And there have been very high points and very low points. And even at the start of this tournament, when he failed against India and failed again against South Africa, and, you know, you could kind of sort of start to think there might be a bit of a drumbeat here. If he doesn't pull his finger out soon, he's going to be dropped or something like that. And feeling that every time he walks out, it to me has always felt a little bit like when Dean Jones walked out when I was a kid, and just desperately wanting it to work out for him. And now the extra layer of that, it's not just like Dino, your childhood hero, it's someone who's become a mate. So yeah, you getting to see that and call that, that'll sit with you forever. So it's a very appropriate addition to the Final Word Hall of Fame. I've got a couple of others. Marnus and the national anthem today. Feels like a long time ago now. It was probably about 12 hours ago, but closing his eyes, as I put on Twitter, belting it out like Celine Dion. I would have loved to have been stood next to him. He was the one who was initiating the sway down one end as well. So he was very attached to the whole thing and played his role today, I suppose. Mitchell Starc wearing black sleeves. We've seen the gold, we've seen the green. Now we've seen Starc wearing the black for those who have been keeping tabs on this through the course of the last 7 weeks. Yep. And Ibrahim Zadran, who I'm not sure this will get picked up in quite the same way now because events have overtaken it. But the way he lavished praise on Sachin Tendulkar at his interview halfway through the game, he kind of said at the end, just I want to say one more thing. I dedicate this innings to Sachin Tendulkar being there yesterday. I'm sure he's a savvy social media operator, and knowing if he says those words and they're clipped up, he'll find himself another a million followers or something like that. There is so much more.
I've one other I need an honourable mention for is Rashid Khan bowling a ball so good that he did a forward roll afterwards in excitement. That leg break that he bowls that fizzes past the outside edge. And there's nothing to appeal for because it hasn't taken the nick and it hasn't hit the pad, but he's so excited he just throws himself on the ground and rolls around for a while.
Hashmat Tatullah, who is the captain, of course, of Afghanistan, the flourish in which he gave the tee for the challenge was noted by Nick Tuvey on Twitter as being Final Word Hall of Fame worthy, as it was by Guy Hornsby, one of our listeners, that Maxi hit 69% of Australia's runs tonight. Nice.
Nice. Nice. If only they'd been all out, it would have been Bannerman territory. I'm exhausted. I'm glad. So we ended up recording this a bit late. That's why I'm sitting in the hotel, because everybody else in the commentary box was throwing up. So we had to get out of there as quickly as possible. But I'm glad we had a little extra beat to think about it. Yes, it's ridiculous. Yes, it's a 35 minute daily episode. Fine. There was no other way we could have done it tonight. And I hope that everybody listening understands that.
I think they will. This has been the Final Word Daily in terms of what's to come. Just 6 group games left in this protracted stage. England play the Dutch tomorrow in the European Championship or something like that. Maybe Scotland would get in against the Netherlands for that at the moment. Afghanistan's next game. I wouldn't say they've got their destiny in their own hands, but if they absolutely pump South Africa, they might. They play on Friday. Australia play Bangladesh on Saturday at Pune. And that's it, Jeff. It's a day that we won't forget for all the right reasons. Thanks for coming with us on this journey. And once again, Glenn Maxwell, you fucking beauty. I ain't breezing and I ain't George Benson. I ain't protected, brother, I ain't fenced in. If my future questions my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go.